America's best-known baby doctor, Dr. Benjamin Spock, died yesterday at his home at the age of 94. Since the mid-40s, Dr. Spock's book, Baby and Child Care, has been considered a parenting Bible, and many of us are the products of his approach to child-rearing. The book begins with the reassuring sentence, "You know more than you think you do," and goes on to offer nervous parents plenty of advice about their child's health and development. In the late 60s, the famous baby doctor was also in the front lines of the protests against the war in Vietnam. I spoke with Dr. Spock in 1988 and asked how his views on raising children had changed over the years.
I always believed that parents should respect their children but should not forget to ask for respect from their children. And I never changed my basic philosophy, though, of course, all kinds of things have changed in pediatrics, and there have been all kinds of sociological changes. I don't mean that I'm obstinate or stuck in the mud. Maybe I am, but I wouldn't be proud of that.
You combined pediatrics and psychology, and I was wondering what brought the realization to you that the two in your work belong together.
There were no other pediatricians who'd had formal training in psychoanalysis or psychiatry or psychology. I was in the middle of my pediatric residency when I realized I must have some kind of training, and I wrote to several professors of pediatrics asking where I could get such training, and they all answered there is no such training, which certainly was true. So I thought in terms of a residency. I took a one-year residency in psychiatry that was going to include some child psychiatry. The one thing that I learned out of that year was that the people on the staff, the teaching staff, who made the patient's symptoms and behavior meaningful were the psychoanalytically trained people. So I decided I need psychoanalytic training. So in 1933, when I started pediatric practice, I began psychoanalytic training at the New York Psychoanalytic Institute. If you want to persist, why did I decide that this was so important? I think that it was because I grew up in a very child-centered family. My mother stopped playing bridge that she loved to do when I was born and kept away from the bridge table until our youngest child was in college. But she was also a very severe parent who made life somewhat miserable for all of her children. And I think my feeling was, one, I'm concerned about being the best kind of pediatrician I can be, but I must have also realized, at least dimly, there are pleasanter, easier ways of bringing up children than the rather severe, stern, moralistic way my mother brought all of us up.
When you first started publishing your baby and child care book, it was, I think, 1946.
That's right.
What kind of advice was in the air then? What were the typical baby care manuals telling parents to do?
Well, a good example would be thumb-sucking. The books that predated mine said thumb-sucking is a bad habit. And if you see your baby beginning to thumb suck, why, you should immediately step in and prevent it by, one, painting nasty-tasting stuff on the thumb, or another way is to put aluminum mitts on the baby's hands, or the most horrible way is to spread eagle the baby by tying his wrists to the slats of the side of his crib. And when I was a resident in pediatrics, nurses thought that they were doing their duty. Here were these poor, miserable infants snatched away from home and from everybody that they knew, and they were trying to comfort themselves, at least half of them, by sucking their thumbs, and they weren't allowed to do even that. Well, I couldn't find out right away what's good advice about thumb sucking, but gradually I came to the kind of advice that's in baby and child care, that it has something to do with not having enough sucking satisfaction.
So what do you tell parents to do if their baby is sucking?
I say, don't wait until he becomes a thumb sucker. And incidentally, some babies have the skill to be a thumb sucker right from birth, and others it takes them a couple of months to learn regularly to get the thumb in their mouth. What I say is, just as soon as you see signs that the baby is trying, use a pacifier.
since 1968, some people have charged you with permissiveness.
I know.
And because of some of the principles in the Baby and Child Care book, but also by 1968, you were in the front lines of the anti-war protests. And I think some people felt that the baby boom generation that was demonstrating against the war was somehow under your spell.
I know.
Because of your baby and child care books. Did you think that the permissiveness charges really had as much to do with anti-war protests as it did with parenting?
I think that the accusations that I was permissive came not from anything that was in my book. It really came from the political situation that I was opposed to a war that a majority, certainly of conservative people, felt should be supported. Actually, it's always people who've not used the book who are sure that my book was corruptive. The kind of letter that I used to get, angry letter that I only get rarely now, said, "Thank God I never used your horrible book. That's why my children take baths and wear clean clothes and get good grades in school." Whereas the people who've used my book almost invariably say, if they mention this subject at all, they say, "And I don't see that the book is permissive." And I say, "That's right. Never was intended to be permissive. I never believed that you should give children anything they want or let them say anything they want or have anything they want."
When you started protesting against the war in Vietnam and marching against it, you were already in your 60s.
That's right.
And you once said...
Strange age to begin behaving like that.
Well, usually people get more conservative, not more radical as they get older.
Right.
But you once said that when you first started demonstrating, you found the experience excruciatingly embarrassing.
Oh, it was.
Well,
I was
why?
A very self-conscious person to be out on picketing and walking around in a circle and having television and radio people stick a microphone under my nose and saying, "Doctor, what are you doing here?" As if I'd been caught in a raid. It was very embarrassing to me. I counted on my dignity. I didn't start by protesting against the war in Vietnam. You see, what I started with was the need for a test ban treaty back mm-hmm. in 1962. And I was convinced that if we didn't have a test ban treaty and all nations as they developed nuclear arms kept testing to their heart's content, there'd be more and more fallout all around the world, more and more children dying of cancer and leukemia or being born with mental and physical defects. So I saw it very definitely as a pediatric issue.
In your baby and child care book, you have a warning to your readers. You write, "Warning, salesmen for children's encyclopedias, sets of books on child care, nursery furniture, children's clothing and equipment may claim that Dr. Spock is intimately connected with their enterprises in some way, or at least endorse their products. All such claims are fraudulent and entitle you to threaten to call the authorities." In order to get rid of the salesman. Has Dr. Spock become such the institution that you have to issue warnings to your readers to watch out for this?
I don't know whether the warnings are necessary now. Certainly for a while I found from parents reporting to me that salesmen came around were very persistent. So I wanted to give parents a good, strong basis for turning them away to tell them, "You're a scoundrel and get out of my way before I call the police."
That's good. One last question. Did you ever show your mother your baby and child care book? And if so, what was her reaction to it?
Well, I was living in fear and trembling when the book came out about what my mother would say, because it ran very counter to many of her ideas. And after I'd sent her a copy, I was almost trembling, waiting for her to say something. And she said, "Benny, I think it's quite sensible." Well, I don't know whether she really read it or whether she really read it but didn't understand what was in it or whether she was just decided to be kind. Anyway, it was a great relief.
Dr. Spock, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been fun.
Dr. Benjamin Spock died yesterday at the age of 94. Our interview was recorded in 1988.